It's important that the culture is carried on.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball, another season recap podcast. Today we're going to be looking at the Miami Heat, and to talk about the Miami Heat and their 2017-18 season, I'm joined by Basketball Monster's own Greg Ehrenberg.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous. Yeah.
Greg?
Nice.
I forgot. I realized that I forgot to do that the last couple of times you've been on, and I was not happy with myself. But there you go. You get the Greg drop. It's all coming together. It's all back to normal now, and we're ready to talk about this Miami Heat team, which had an interesting last off season. Seems to be pretty locked into what they're going to do. They were okay. Obviously, got beaten by the Sixers in five games in the playoffs. Finished the season 44-38 for that sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. If we're going to talk draft, we don't really need to talk about Miami, Greg, because they don't have a single pick at all. No first rounder, no second rounder. And that's really not a surprise. They're also out a couple of, or at least one more future first that's got to go to Phoenix in the future. This is a team that's pretty locked in with who they are at the moment.
Yeah, and they have a lot of players on the team that I do like. And I think they have some really underrated assets, like Josh Richardson, I think, is a really strong player who's probably much better than most people realize. But then they're stuck with other contracts, like the Whiteside one. So it's a really weird team that I feel like has some of my favorite and least favorite contracts in the league.
Yeah, and I'd also throw in some of my favorite and least favorite players in the league as well when we talk about this Heat team. Let's have a look at what their upcoming, off-season situation is. There's a bunch of guys who are unrestricted free agents. The most important one of those, or what gets that's debatable, would be the Duke, Wayne Ellington, who is an unrestricted free agent. You've also got Dwayne Wade, who came across, and I don't know if he helped. He helped. He had a good playoff game. He had one of those, but in the end, I don't know if he was overall a positive player for this team. Lukey Babbitt is also unrestricted. Udonis Haslem and Jordan Mickey. While the two Derek Juniors, both on two ways, Derek Jones Jr. and Derek Walton Jr. will be restricted free agents, while Scooter Magruder has a non-guaranteed deal that he came back towards the end of the season after missing most of the beginning of the year with a foot issue. Wade or Ellington, who's the more important guy to sign from a team need, not a team appearance or culture sake?
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be Ellington, in my opinion, mostly because of the age of Wade, and then also the perimeter spacing that Ellington's able to provide for them. One of the issues with Wade kind of playing in advanced stages, he's never developed a really good three-point shot. He had that one stretch last year with Chicago where he started the year like shooting ridiculously from three, and it was like, oh, is Wade gonna make threes now? And then it was something that just never really happened. So at this point of Wade's career, I don't really see a way that he's going to be able to make himself a viable player, either for fantasy or real life, if he's not going to be able to knock down perimeter shots. I think he's just a pretty big liability on both ends of the floor at this point in his career.
Yeah, I agree. We'll get back into Dwayne in a sec. Just a couple of more things on this Heat team in terms of their overall, team identity. They were a slow team, 27th in the NBA in pace and had the 22nd best offense, but unsurprisingly, they were 7th in the NBA in defense. They had that 44-38 record. They were expected to win 42-40 with their defense getting them over the line for a couple of extra games there, playing probably above themselves for big stretches of times. They were 7th in the NBA in three-point attempt rate. A lot of that is due to the way that Ellington plays, and having Kelly Linick and James Johnson play minutes at center. That also helps as well. And defensively, in terms of limiting the opposition in their shooting percentages, they were 7th in the NBA in that, and that was a key part of their defensive success as the season went on. Let's talk about the elephant in the room with this team, and that is Hassan Whiteside. Greg, he is a player who is divisive. Well, maybe he's not divisive. Maybe most people actually think that he's overrated. But he was not good this year. Only 25 minutes per game, battled injuries. And some people will say that, oh, the reason he was so bad this year or his minutes were so low were because of the injuries. I don't necessarily think that was the case. He averaged 14 and 11 with 1.7 blocks, 54 and 70 as his percentages. And we saw that block rate continue to decline from where it was at 3.7 per game in 15-16 down to 2.1 last year, now down to 1.7. As he's become a better defender, his shot blocking numbers have dipped. His minutes are well down. And can he recover from this?
Well, he's probably more likely to be better this year than he was last year than he is to be worse, just because I can't imagine him playing worse than what he did last year. And I think one of the other issues with him is there's such a massive chemistry issue with him in the locker room, where he was criticizing Spoelstra after games towards the end of the season. He was saying that he's the best player on the team and he deserves to be playing more minutes. So not only was – and then his effort on the court was total shit at the end of the season. So not only is he delusional, except he was clearly not playing as hard as he could have, which is such a massive issue for an NBA player. So I don't really know what they're going to do with him in the offseason. The contract is massive, so I can't imagine that they're unloading the, 2 years and over $50 million left on the contract. So I don't know what they do with him, but I think the best case scenario is you just hope that he comes in next season with a better attitude. What do you think of Whiteside?
He's a bona fide dickhead. I don't think there's any argument with that. The post-game stuff, the criticisms of Spoelstra, the delusion of what he is as a player, it's nonsense. And I've said this all the time. The reason he wasn't in the NBA to start off after Sacramento is because he was a dickhead, because he couldn't commit himself to doing what needed to be done, because he had attitude issues and clashed with coaches. And he came in and he pulled his head in for a year and a half, 2 years, and got a contract. And now he's just resorting to the same stuff. He's not that good. He's not that good of an offensive player. He is a good shot blocker and he can be a good defender. And he's shown that he can be a decent defender at the rim. In space, he gets cooked. And that's why, with the way the NBA is going, a player like this can't be out there for 33 minutes per night. And one thing I find interesting with this Heat team and looking at all their on-off stuff is out of their regular players, the three worst players in terms of on-off are the three players who I probably dislike the most on this team, and not necessarily in terms of character, but just as players. And that's Dwayne Wade, Deion Waiters, and Hassan Whiteside. They're all negative fives in their on-off. And I don't think that should be surprising. These are guys who people think that they're good, but they're not necessarily all that good in terms of overall impact on winning. And Whiteside, does he ever become a 2-block-per-game guy again? I would doubt that. Will he ever become a guy that can get to 17 points again like he did in 16-17? Probably not. I can't really see him getting touches to that degree. Interestingly, his usage actually did go up this season, despite the scoring going down, mainly because he played fewer minutes. But I just don't see him being that guy who's going to approach top 20-type numbers, which he did for two seasons, and this year drifted outside the top 50, and over the last 20 games of the year was outside the top 110. And I think he's a real risky pick in drafts next year. He is going to turn 29 before the start of the season. And we're talking about a guy that, look, maybe he plays better than last year, but I don't see it being a massive change.
I think one of the other issues, too, is he's probably the third best center on the team. Like, I think that they're much better off with Kelly Olynyk or James Johnson running center for them.
Or Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, I think you could probably throw Bam in the mix also. So I don't know what they do with that contract. I don't really know if there is anything they could do. I think he's just the type of personality where you give him the big money and there's a chance that he's just not going to show up after that. And that seems to be what the case is.
Yeah, that does seem to be what has happened here with Whiteside. Let's move on to a more positive note and let's talk about Joshy Richardson, who is obviously one of my favorite players. He's 24 years of age. He played 81 games this season, 33 minutes, 13 points, 1.6 triples, 3.5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 steals, and 0.9 blocks. 45, 85, 38% shooting. I think he's the best player in this team. You could easily make that argument for Goran Dragic, but I think that Richardson is that guy. He's one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, and he should be. And by the time this podcast has been released, he may have already been named to an all-defensive team. Again, we are recording this a little bit more, considerably before it is actually released out there, so I think Richardson will be on one of those teams. I could be wrong. And he was obviously a really impactful fantasy guy. Just narrowly missed the triple one status by only getting 0.9 blocks, but hit threes, three assists, playing at small forward, the steals, the blocks. It's super valuable. He was the 57th ranked player this season, and there is still room for him to improve. He only had a usage of 18% with guys like Wade is siphoning them away early on and Wade siphoning away the shots later in the season when Richardson should have been seeing more touches. And I think he can become and probably have maybe one top 40 season in his career. How do you view Richardson, or am I just alone here in singing his praises?
No, he definitely improved from 2017 to the 2018 season, or I guess 2016, 2017, 2017, 2018. The biggest improvement for him was the three-point shooting. So he shot 38% last season after shooting 33% the year before. And the one thing that is a little frustrating about Richardson is his jump shot is wildly inconsistent. There are stretches he'll go through where he just can't make anything. But then there's other stretches where he's doing really well on the perimeter, knocking down his jump shots. So if he could make that jump shot a more consistent weapon for him, then I think that you could really talk about him potentially being a top 40 or so fantasy player. And then also really being one of the better value contracts in the league.
I'll say one thing about his shooting. Like his rookie season, he shot 46% from three, which is clearly a high-level anomaly, and then down to 33% last year. But last year, he was bothered by knee injury to start the season. He had no training camp, no preseason, and it came into the season with a knee injury. And then he hurt his wrist in the second half of the year. So you need your legs and you need your wrist to shoot. And I think both of those things really did result in him shooting, you know, 4 percentage points less from three and 5 percentage points less overall from the field. I think that was a big impact. We've had two out of his three seasons where he's been a very good 3-point shooter and one where he wasn't. And the one where he wasn't was the one where he was, his wrist was screwed and he had a bung knee. So I think that we can put stock into that. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to continually be a 38% 3-point shooter, but there is a reason why it was poor in that second year. And again, he is only just completed his third season. He's a little bit older as a young guy. He's going to turn 25 at some point in this coming season, but there's still room for improvement. And averaging 13 this season, he could jump that to 15 and a half next year. Of course, the specter of Dion Waiters is I can't think of the word I'm looking for Waiters. Inability to recognize how shitty is. That's a good way of describing it. That could have an impact on Richardson as well, but that's going to come down to Spoelstra. Can he rein in Waiters and Wade and get the ball into the hands of the guys who are actually the good players on this team? And that could have an impact on players like that. What about Dragic? He did make the All-Star team this year. I didn't think he necessarily deserved that spot, but he has, over the course of his career, I think he did deserve an All-Star appearance at some point. He's 30, just turned 32, 32 minutes per game this year, averaged 17 points per game to lead the team in scoring, almost 5 assists, 4 rebounds, 1.5 threes and 0.8 steals. But something that did drop him down to the 79th ranked player when he'd been around 50th was the fact that his efficiency dipped down to 45%, 37 from three. And one of the big attractions of Dragic as a fantasy player was the fact that he was able to be a 48, 49, 50% field goal guy as a point guard, which is an extreme rarity. Are we looking at this dip in his efficiency as an age-related thing, do you think? I think that's probably the case.
I think that could be part of it. One thing that is also pretty notable looking at his numbers is with Whiteside off the floor this year, he did shoot 47% from the field. So I do wonder how much of that was Whiteside impacting floor spacing. So if Whiteside's going to have a lesser role this season, I think that there is potential for a little bit of a bounce back from Dragic.
He only finished at 59% at the rim, and some of that is to do with, you know, potentially Whiteside clogging things up. So when you're talking about guys spreading out like Olynyk and like Bam to a lesser degree, or like Jim Johnson, you might be able to see that number go back up. And he used to be a really, really strong finisher there and never been an excellent three-point shooter, although the 37% is pretty good. But if he can get that that finishing level back up to 62, 63, 64%, then we're talking about a field goal percentage rise. So he's still going to be a standard league guy. No one's taking this role off him. It's not Tyler Johnson. It's not Dion Waiters. They aren't becoming the starting point guard over Goran Dragic, and he should still be solid. But if he dropped from 31.7 minutes down to 31 minutes or 30.7 minutes, I wouldn't be surprised just as they try and conserve that energy as he enters his 32nd year of life. Let's talk Olynyk, because you've already mentioned you think he's the best center on this team. I've been a big Olynyk fan from back in his time in Boston. He had a top 100 fantasy year this year in only 23 minutes per game. I swear, if this guy ever gets 30 minutes per game, the top 40 is pretty much a guarantee, I think. 11.5 points, 1.5 threes, 6 boards, 3 assists, 0.8 steals, half a block, 50, 77, 38 as his percentages. He can do things in every area. He gets assists at a pretty decent rate. I think this is his best assist rate, 4.2 per 36. Again, part of the Heat offense, but part of what he can do as a creator. Hits threes, spaces out, can finish. Not a bad defender. Not a good defender, but not a bad defender. At least good enough to be in that area. And he actually led this team in box score plus minus. He was second on this team in VORP behind Joshy Richardson. He had a PER of 18, which is pretty high. Now, to be fair to Whiteside, he led the team in PER as well. Well, Olynyk was the highest on this team in terms of on-off numbers. And someone by the name of Matt Williams actually led this team in on-off at a plus 74.5. I'm sure you're well across the 11 minutes that Matt Williams played this season. I just thought I'd throw that out there. But Olynyk, out of the players who actually played, was the best player on this team in terms of those on-off metrics. He'd always flashed this potential, but took it to a new level in Boston. And do you think that there is any chance, 10%, 15% chance, that he opens up the season as the starting center over Whiteside?
I think ideally he would. One of the reasons that his box score plus minus is the best on the team, not only is it because he was solid, but it's also because how much of a negative Whiteside was to the team when he was on the floor. So there's certainly a correlation there. And that's also a good reason that I would think the Heat should look at this situation and say, look how much better we were with Olynyk on the floor than we were with Whiteside on the floor. Therefore, we should start Olynyk. So the smart move would be for them to start Olynyk, but I'm a little concerned that they're going to say, hey, we have all this money. We have all this money that we have committed to Whiteside. Therefore, we have to start him.
One thing that is impressive with Olynyk through his career is he's always improved his efficiency every season. True shooting went from 54.6 to 55.8 to 56.1 to 60.3 to 61.2. And that's a guy getting more comfortable and understanding what he's doing in the game every year as those numbers continue to rise. He also had his second best defensive box score plus minus season last year as well, improving on that defensive end without being great, but improving there. And I think that he should be a guy that you can look to take at the end of rounds next season. Again, if they say they're starting Whiteside, then that caps him off. But if they start Whiteside and play him 22 and then they play Olynyk 29, then the top 50 is clearly within reach for him because he could average 14 and 7 and 0.8 blocks and a steal and 3.5 assists and hit 2 threes and do it all efficiently. And that's obviously really useful fantasy numbers or in real life numbers for this Miami Heat team. And he was quite good throughout the season. And a guy who disappointed early on, Greg, after an excellent end to last season, and there was always a risk of this with James Johnson, considering how unbelievable he was to end the 16-17 season when there was a ton of injuries, and then you're crowding the front court with the return or with the presence of Justice Winslow and Kelly Olynyk, and he did struggle a little bit, but ended out this season having some good games. Only 27 minutes per game for James Johnson to be the 97th ranked player, 11 points, a 3, 5 boards, 4 assists, a steal, 0.7 blocks, 50, 70, and 31 as his percentages. He is not a young player. He's already 31 years of age. And that 27 minute per game role feels like it's something that will probably be maybe best case scenario for next year.
Yeah, I think, well, also, I think it's a little dependent on what happens with Whiteside, but it does seem that he's somebody who they don't like to consistently give a ton of minutes to. Even when he was starting down the stretch of the season, a lot of those games he was only playing minutes in kind of like the low 20, high teens. He wasn't consistently playing a lot of minutes. So I probably don't see a situation where they are going to be willing to give him like 32, 33 minutes or so per game. But he also did improve his efficiency a lot as the year went on. If you look at him pre-All-Star, he was shooting 48.5%, which is fine, but post All-Star break, he actually shot 54% from the field, which is really strong, averaging over a block and a steal per game over that stretch also. So he definitely has fantasy relevance. I just think that the upside is a little bit capped by the amount of minutes he's going to play.
The last four games of the playoffs against the Sixers, he really started to show us, you know, the James Johnson we'd seen it all. 37 minutes, 18, 7 and 5 with 3 steals and a block. 32 minutes, 12, 7 and 5 with a steal and 2 blocks. 36 minutes, 15, 8 and 5 with a triple one. And then the closeout game, the Sixers won. 32 minutes, 4, 5, 5, 1 steal, 2 blocks. And they were the numbers that he was putting up down the stretch last season in the 16-17 year that made us get so excited about him. And we did also see that playmaking at the end of the regular season start to rear its head again. 6-5-4, 7-5, 6-6. Like, that's stretches of games with those assists happening in those ones. And that's where he provides that value. And even in 27 minutes per game, he can be useful as an assists, steals, blocks guy on okay efficiency. And that can be useful. But as you said, whether they do extend him that playing time, when the rotation is spread out a little bit more, then will he get to that same level? That feels probably unlikely to be playing those 30-plus minutes. But yeah, it was good to see him, after early season struggles, be able to crank it up a little bit as the season went on. So the Heat ended up having 5 players as top 100 guys: Whiteside, Richardson, Dragic, Olynyk, and Johnson. We'll move to the guys who were outside the top 100. Tyler Johnson, who started big chunks of the season at shooting guard. I don't know what to make of this guy. His contract turns into a massive one this year after that weird restricted free agency deal that the Nets offered and then Miami matched. So he's on a ton of money this season. He played 29 minutes per game in his 72 games. He's 26 years of age, 12 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.8 steals, 1.7 threes, 44, 82, 37%. When Waiters comes back, is he going to be the guy that cops it the most?
Yeah, I would think so. If Waiters is going to play and he's going to be what he was 2 years ago, which I don't think is very likely, but if he's almost what he is, then I think that it probably comes at the expense of Tyler Johnson. I think most likely neither Waiters or Johnson are going to have relevance in standard leagues next year, because unless one of them's hurt, they're really going to be cutting into each other's playing time.
Yeah, I don't see either of them being relevant fantasy guys, really, for most leagues, not top 150 players. And yeah, they will cut into that playing time. There was opportunities for Johnson this season, didn't really stamp himself as a starting caliber player. But it's not like the Heat have really much room to make any improvements in the draft. They don't have a pick. They don't have the free agency space to necessarily do that. Maybe trades could happen, but it's going to be him. It's going to be Wade. There's Ellington, whether he comes back or not. So there are players in the mix there. And if he plays fewer than the 28 minutes that he played this season, I don't think anybody should be surprised. And he's very far from a high upside guy. And he's not a guy who's contributing big numbers in one particular category where you go, well, you know what? If I need steals, I can add him. Or if I need assists, like, he just gives you blah numbers right across the board, which is fine in a 16-team roto type setting, but otherwise it's not really that exciting. Now, we did mention this already, but let's talk Dwayne Wade, who is not good anymore. He had those flashes in the playoffs. He had a couple of games where he went, oh, playoff D Wade, and then he had 4 points in the next game, because that is a load of shit. He was the 170th ranked player. He's 36 years of age, 23 minutes, 11.5 points, 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 0.9 steals, and 0.7 blocks. So there's some signs of vintage Wade there. The decent assists, the good steals, the excellent blocks, but the lack of efficiency, the fact he doesn't hit threes, the low minutes, none of it is conducive to me going, well, yeah, Wade's going to be this great option next season as he's back in Miami and he's comfortable. I just don't see it. I don't know where we go from here with Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, I think he's, my gut feeling is that he retires. That was the vibe I got from at the press conference at the end of the season. They had a reporter asked him, do you think this is going to be your last game in the Heat uniform? And he kind of choked up for a second and said he wasn't ready to discuss at that point in time. But it felt to me like he was going to retire. If he does come back, it's weird, because the reason that he would come back to the Heat is just a legacy thing. That's the reason they would bring him back. But he doesn't fit into this roster. They have so many guards that do a lot of the same stuff he does, that but better, like we were talking about Ellington earlier, and they already have Tyler Johnson in that role. So they're so stacked the position, I don't even think he makes sense for this roster. So I think it's better for everybody if he doesn't come back this season.
Yeah, I agree. And he was not good in Miami. Like, the team was significantly better off with him on the bench. He was a negative 6.5 on off, a negative 3.7 box score plus minus, a negative win shares, true shooting of 47%. Like, these are all poor numbers. Plus, he did that while having a usage of 30.7% in Miami, which is just nonsense. To be a guy that is that bad of a shooter, 46% true shooting, and take 30% of possessions when you're on the court is it's poor self-awareness on his behalf. It's poor coaching to allow that to happen. And I know Spoelstra's going to say, well, it's Dwayne Wade, but it wasn't benefiting the team in any way. And Dwayne Wade is a legend. He's one of the best players of all time, guaranteed Hall of Famer, all of that. I'm not shitting on his legacy at all. But at this stage in 2018, at the age of 36, he's not good anymore. And that happens to players all the time. He was one of the best of all time, one of the best fantasy contributors of all time, and now he's not. And I think we just have to accept that's the case. And if he retires, it is better for this Heat team overall. Glad that he came back to Miami and finished his career there. But yeah, that's the career is finished. I think the Duke, Wayne Ellington, he is surprisingly already over 30. He is one of those guys where you can plug him in off the waiver wire and he's going to hit threes. He hit three triples per game last season in 26 minutes, 11 points, three rebounds, an assist. But pretty much he gives you nothing. He just gives you nothing else apart from threes. And there is no indication that that is changing.
Nah, he's a better real life contributor than fantasy contributor, because the three pointers and the ability to spread the floor has a lot of value to an actual NBA team. But from a fantasy perspective, you really only want to pick him up if you're streaming for threes and you need that to win a head to head match one week. Then he makes sense to pick up, or else there isn't really a lot of utility for him.
He took an astonishing, and I've just lost the number now, where is it? 82.7 of his shots came from three-point land. That's basically every shot is happening from deep. And that's fine, because he's hitting them and he's contributing, and he converted over three, or almost three per game during the course of the season at 39%. He's a knockdown three-point shooter. And he does nothing else, and very little is going to change. Now, we've touched on Wade a little bit. He only played 30 games this year. He played 31 minutes of them and averaged 14 points. And I think that 31 minutes, 14 points is a realistic expectation of what he might be able to do next season. But of course, in true Dion Waiters style, he was the 184th ranked player in that time. He does nothing in the other areas, really. He hurts you in both percentages. Yeah, 3.8 assists is pretty good, and maybe he can help there. But overall, his combined fantasy value, it's not as high as some people may believe it to be.
No, he's a good fantasy contributor if you're punting percentages, blocks, steals. If you're punting everything, then he makes sense.
That sounds about right.
It's probably not somebody you want to own.
No. Look, he can help. Look, those four assists per game can be useful. You get 15 points and four assists, that can be useful. But you've got to be able to deal with the negatives in every other area that he provides. Also, combine the fact that he's not actually a contributor to winning basketball majority of the time. And if Spoelstra sees that and you know, deals with that might cut his playing time down as well at times. So that is the concern. But the points and assist combination can be interesting. He is only 26 years of age still. I feel like he's been around for 20 years for some reason. He's just constantly in your collective consciousness. But he still only is 26. But I don't see Dion Waiters maturing into a guy who becomes this great shot selection guy who tries on defense. And they're the two things that are really lacking in his game. Let's talk about Justice Winslow, who has battled injuries through his beginning of his NBA career, but was relatively healthy this year. I say relatively. He played 68 games, but that's an improvement. He's still only 22 years of age. He played 25 minutes and had 8, 5, and 2 with 0.7 threes, 0.8 steals, and 0.5 blocks. Shot 43 and 64 from the field, but an impressive 38% from three. I don't really know what to make of Justice Winslow at this point. He showed he could play at center in playoff series before. He's shown that he can handle the ball as a point guard at times, but his numbers just, they're all over the place. The efficiency is still a concern despite the good three-point shooting. And last year he shot 19% from three. So when you shoot 38, it's a huge, huge change. But still, a true shooting of sub 50% is not good. What do we make of this guy? Is he going to develop into a starter, or are they still going to be rolling with James Johnson there, or does Josh Richardson move to the two so Winslow can start at the three? I cannot peg this guy at all.
All right, so here's my opinion on Winslow. if he was going to be a 38% three-point shooter, then I say there's a role for him in the league, and he could probably become a starting caliber player. But here's the issue I have. Like you said, he shot 19% from three the year before. Well, he shot 2 years ago 62% from the free throw line, and then last year he shot 63.5% from the free throw line. So I don't buy the improved three-point shooting at all, because he was a terrible free throw shooter before. He's still a terrible free throw shooter. If he was actually a better shooter, then I think we would have seen an improvement in that category also. So for that reason, I'm selling the improvement in his three-point shooting. I think it regresses next year, and I don't think he's going to be much of a player next season. Maybe I'm wrong, because he was well-regarded coming out of college when he was at Duke, and he did make the shots last year, so it's not impossible it happens again. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Defensively, he's a positive. Like, he's a good defender. He gets into people and gets up on them, and we saw that. He did that with Ben Simmons at times in the playoffs. Passing, fine, but overall offense, he's a real issue, because he can be left alone, and look, those shots do go in, but you know, Rajon Rondo's been hitting shots at a decent rate. Doesn't mean he's an offensive threat all the time that he's out there, and Winslow's in that similar boat. I do think that there is a chance that we see him start at the three, Josh Richardson push down to the two, and then we get Johnson and Olynyk there, but Do we see him start at the four and Richardson stays at the three? Because they don't really have too many guys who are small forward size. And Winslow ideally should be pushing into that role. But is he good enough? Can he maintain something offensively to do that? And I just don't know. But I could see him rising from the 25 minutes he played this season and play 30 minutes next year and be a solid starter in his fourth season and be a guy that gives you three assists, gives you 1.2 steals, gives you seven rebounds, six rebounds, and maybe 10 points. And that can be useful. But it's all going to come down to, can he do anything offensively? Because if he's a massive negative there, then they've got, and we've talked about it enough, they've got guys everywhere. They've got Waiters. They've got Ellington probably coming back. They've got Johnson. They can shift their lineups around Whiteside. They've got Magruder, who's going to be probably healthy for a whole season. There are so many different options that if he struggles in those areas, the minutes just won't, they won't be there. And that's the concern you have with Winslow. Another young guy on this team who I've spoken about quite a bit on the draft recap shows, and I'll let you talk about him here, is Bam Adebayo. Played 69 games.
Giggity!
He's 20. He's going to turn 21 at the start of the year. 7 points, 5.5 boards, half a steal, 0.6 blocks, 1.5 assists, 71%, 72%. I was surprised with how well he played, and I've got to stop doing this and probably stop saying it as well, is that guys that come out of Kentucky, when they start showing more abilities in the NBA than they do at Kentucky, it's pretty much a consistent at this point. So anyone coming out from Kentucky, when they do stuff that we didn't see in college, we'd go, okay, that's expected now, because we saw that again with Bam this year. His ability to pass was really, really impressive as that center, and another reason why I think maybe he's a better option than Whiteside, even though he's not quite the same level of rim protector. Where does he go from here? Can he elevate into a bigger role next season, or is the Olynyk Whiteside combination, assuming Whiteside's still there, going to hold him back?
Well, one of the other issues I have with Adebayo is he did start a handful of games this year, started 19 games for the Heat, and in the games he started, he was way less efficient. His field goal percentage went down to 45% from 55% when he came off the bench, which I think this is something we see fairly commonly with guys who are pretty good permanent producers that are big men off the bench, is they do really well against a lesser level of competition. When we see them matched up against starting caliber players, they really struggle. So for that reason, I think Adebayo is probably better suited to be somebody who plays 25 or so minutes off the bench.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be a 32-minute-per-game center. And you mentioned that the field goal percentage, he wasn't an efficient guy overall. He hit just 27% of his mid-range shots, which of course is poor, and it's 7th percentile for big men in the NBA. But the passing stuff was impressive to me, something I didn't necessarily expect to see. Defensively, I thought he was pretty solid, but I still do feel that he is going to be in a position where we're going to have Olynyk and Whiteside, unless Whiteside is traded, playing those minutes above him, and he will struggle to find himself in a significantly large enough role to be a guy who is impactful in fantasy leagues for this coming season. And the other guys on this team, the only guy I think we really need to talk about here is Rodney Magruder, who only played 18 games. But do you see anything from him? He is just one of those guys to me that can eat up minutes without doing anything in that playing time.
Yeah, definitely from a fantasy perspective, he's never going to be relevant. He's not relevant from a DFS perspective. I think he was a decent find by the Heat because they basically turned a G League player who had no value into somebody who they got to play minutes for them and not be a massive negative on a cheap contract. So I think Magruder probably carves out a role for himself this year, playing maybe like 15 minutes per game or something like that, depending on what happens with Wade and how the roster shakes out. And he's going to contribute not much in terms of box score stats and some decent defense. Definitely someone to ignore for any fantasy league, no matter how deep it is.
Yeah, he's not even going to crack the top 300, no matter how many minutes he played. The other guys on this roster, Babbitt, Mickey, Walton, Derek Jones Jr., I don't see any future really in any of those guys. Derek Jones Jr., to me, is just not a good NBA player at all. And Udonis Haslem, who will likely retire, I would assume, at this point. So I think that wraps it up here, Greg, for the Miami Heat. Give everyone a plug of where they can find you on Twitter and stuff that they can follow of yours.
Yeah, you guys could follow me on Twitter at GErenbergDFS. I write baseball content for RotoPros, and I write stuff for DraftKings. And everything I do goes up on my Twitter page. My podcast is Foul Balls Podcast, covering baseball every weekday right now, and then we'll be getting into basketball and football once those seasons start up also.
Cool. Make sure you're checking out Greg and listening to his podcast and subscribe to this one as well. Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Check out LockedOnSports.com and the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, basketball, football, and now baseball. Greg, thanks for coming on, and we will chat to you again soon.
Sooner than most people realize.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Udonis Haslem.